Time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 516, and it's October the 25th, 1981. The bulk of the broadcast this evening will be about American terrorism, homegrown terrorism, and some connections that are breaking between the East Coast, the CIA, and various people on the East Coast to a block of offices and relationships on the West Coast, specifically the David Berkowitz story and the Wilson and Turpel story, which made a giant leap in the last several weeks or months and are now landing on the West Coast where they belong and to be analyzed properly as having originated from the West Coast as part of their operations. And I'll go into particulars in a minute on that. There are many articles and editorials coming out on the lack of foreign policy of Ronald Reagan and the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. People are asking, what is his foreign policy? What are the differences between Mr. Pipes and Walter Cecil, Alexander Haig, Richard Allen, William Casey, and Caspar Weinberger? These people are very naive. They have not studied Ronald Reagan. They should have. He was around here for 8 years in California. He has a very simple foreign policy. It's attack the Russians, help the rich, and keep secrets. Lock up the secrets at home, protect the criminals, and help those people that make you richer, decorate your house, and the oil profits go back, recycled into other investments, keep the rich flowing and appreciating their profits and tighten up on the others, and tell the Russians how lousy they are every time you make a speech. That's his foreign policy, and he hides behind smiles when he goes on trips, such as the recent one to Mexico or up in Canada. But when he gets home, he and his agents with their big mouths, or one article referred to the big lips, don't make a foreign policy. But in his case, they make a foreign policy. But there were things in the news this week that I didn't like, and I don't think you appreciated either. One was Major General Robert Schweitzer from the National Security Council telling us we better get ready for war, that the United States is going to strike. And he was removed and put in another office because he allegedly didn't clear this with Mr. Richard Allen of the National Security Council. But he claims that he did clear it, and they said, go on out and say it and see where the flak goes. Earlier this year, Richard Pipes, the specialist on the Soviet Union, said, in quotes, war with the Soviet Union is inevitable unless Moscow changes its political system. Mr. Schweitzer said the seed of pacifism is sweeping over Europe, and we're not immune to it in this country, where bishops and churchmen have been extremely unhelpful in trying to deal with the realities of the communist threat down in Latin America. Now, at the time the Pope was shot, I said that one reason for trying to kill the Pope at this time was that we were going to begin a bloodbath in Central and South America, wiping out native populations in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and the Central America, Cuba, surround Cuba, probably immediately killing Fidel Castro. And because it is a Catholic country with political activists, Catholic activists, the Pope, I don't think, would go along with this. And I said at the time that one of the motives for shooting the Pope was to get rid of this particular Pope because of his inclinations maybe to sympathize with those native populations. And that also was the reason to murder John Lennon in December 1980, just before Reagan came into power with these people, because he certainly, combined with the Beatles, could bring out the feeling of pacifism. To repeat again, Mr. Schweitzer said the seed of pacifism is sweeping over Europe, and we're not immune to it in this country. Bishops and churchmen are extremely unhelpful in dealing with those threats down in Latin America and also the United States. Caspar Weinberger had some more war talk this week, head of the War Council. He had a warning to the United States pacifists that if they are appeasing the Soviet Union, it's similar to appeasing Nazi Germany and Japan in the 30s. To coexist with the Soviet Union is to have appeasement. Ronald Reagan softened that up and said, Regan's, he had a remark about limited war in Europe that stirred up the Allies, and then the limited war comments were softened. No, we would go to war, too. We'd help our allies. We wouldn't just leave the warfare on the doorstep of the Europeans if we fought the Russians. Regan had set off a flap in Europe about the nuclear war. And then Weinberger said and reassured them along with Regan, no, the United States will fight with you if we have a nuclear war. We won't abandon you in a time of a limited nuclear war. We'll go in and fight with you. And then Regan responded later in the news. He denounced the talk of war as confined just to Europe. He said it's outright deception to believe a nuclear war would be limited to Europe as part of the U.S. strategic planning. We've got to have it all over the place. So he assured you, don't worry, it won't be limited to Europe. We'll have it everywhere else you want it. And Weinberger then was issuing reports later in the week of warning to the Soviet Union that the Soviet ideology, he said in quotes, is shop-worn, uninspiring, and hypocritical facade for a system which exploits those it professes to advance. Weinberger didn't talk about South Africa or the broader bands or Argentina or Paraguay or Chile or South Korea or the Philippines or Brazil or Haiti or Guatemala or Uruguay or Taiwan or any military dictatorship we support. He said the Soviets have a hypocritical facade and they exploit people that they profess to advance. Keep in mind the United States doesn't exploit the people we profess to advance. We don't exploit them at all, not at all. The worst example, of course, is ITT, United Fruit, and some of the American corporations. And then some scientists responded that the radiation estimates weren't worth the paper they were written on, that the radiation from nuclear weapons is 50 times much greater than government and industry leaders estimate. And then the Senate moved this week 86-0 to send aid to Chile as they did to Argentina, that they would send arms to General Pinochet, even though high Chilean officers were indicted, never extradited, for responsibility of a murder in Washington, D.C., of Orlando Letelier and his aide, Ms. Moffat. The Senate moved 86-0 to send arms to Chile again, and a little while ago they voted that for Argentina. That's foreign policy, United States version. Then out of California, we had a state senator running for U.S. Senator, Mr. Schmidt, a member of the John Birch Society, and John Schmidt's rather, from Newport Beach, and he said what this country needs is a military coup. The only way to save yourself from internal decay or military attack is a good military coup. That is what is needed. That nations, like people, have an instinct for survival, and there are a lot of things you have to do to stay alive, and that we're at the stage where a military coup would be okay. To waive constitutional traditions is the way we should survive. He's running for U.S. Senator, as I say, and he believes that you have to behave radically someday. He said, we're going to get war, or we're going to have radical surgery, and we may have internal collapse. The best thing you can hope for in the United States is a military coup. Now, not only is John Schmitz a member of the John Birch Society, but he softens the way for the fact, which I have said repeatedly for many, many years, and ever since I've been on the air, that the military coup took place in Dallas. If you don't understand that the South, California, and from Florida and California to Southwest Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, if you don't believe that they won the Civil War at the end of the era in the 60s when John Kennedy was assassinated, then you have to reread some of the current history or the literature or the economy of today to see where the power is. The power and the strength is in Houston, Texas, and in Florida. Always was in California with the aerospace, with the Hughes and the General Dynamics and the Boeing, the headquarters of Fairchild and Lockheed, major aircraft firms, Philco, Ford, and so forth, Roy Ashland Industries, Rand Corporation. The Southern Belt won that conflict when John Kennedy was murdered and the presidency was given to Lyndon Johnson, and then the California boys, Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon. I received from a friend in Texas who subscribes to these programs the most shocking, disgusting news I've seen in a long time, and that has to top some of the news stories of the week. It's from the Dallas Morning News, and we didn't get it out here. It'll come maybe 1 or 2 months later. October 21st, 1981, Ronald Reagan revives his intelligence board. Now, he's trying to stop freedom of information. He wants to prosecute people who name agents. He wants to unleash the CIA and the police departments, as they have been doing ever since the CIA was formed and training down in Panama for terror and torture, and their death squads that exist in this country. He wants the CIA back in the police department. He wants the CIA into organizations where it can overtake policy. Now he's going to revive the intelligence board that wasn't active since the years of Eisenhower and the Cold War, and he has reversed the decision of Jimmy Carter to have this Presidential Intelligence Advisory Board, and he chose among it five Texans. There's 19 members and five Texans, and who would you think would be on it? Ronald Reagan's choice: Ross Perot of Dallas, who worked with Mitchell Werbel in various counterintelligence operations very close to the Iranian CIA operations and the Shah. Ross Perot, the controversial man of Dallas. Former Texas Governor John Connally, who had a major role in hiding the assassination of John Kennedy and has worked with the CIA, with the Nazis down in Montego Bay, with the Intrepid Group, the Permandex operations, one of the chief of the covert operation experts of the entire Cold War assassination syndrome, John Connally. He put Leon Jaworski of Houston, Texas, a man that let the Nazis off at the Nuremberg trials, was on the Warren Commission and concealed the conspiracy, again, with the Nazis involved in the Kennedy assassination, covered up the Watergate investigation, the Koreagate investigation. He's on the intelligence board. And then Edward Bennett Williams is on this board. Edward Bennett Williams is the attorney for John Hinckley, the man that shot at Ronald Reagan, for Robert Vesco, for John Connally, and I've done many programs on Edward Bennett Williams. He's Mr. CIA, Defense Department, and Navy Intelligence combined, as was John Connally, who was Secretary of the Treasury at one time and Secretary of the Navy, and Ambassador Claire Booth Luce. There's a section in the book by Malachi Martin on the Final Conclave, how the CIA with John Connally and Claire Luce were conniving with Michael Sindona and various people, even though Claire Luce is a Catholic. It brought down the Catholic Church to the point of bankruptcy, and it's becoming untangled or more tangled today in financial problems and linkage with organized crime and interlocking intelligence operations. The Vatican is in deep trouble. Well, Claire Booth Luce had a lot of fingers in that. And then Thomas Moore is on this board. He's the one with Henry Kissinger that was taking papers off of Richard Nixon's desk, the President of the United States, with Yeoman Redford, and reading them. And Alexander Haig and Kissinger were literally just stealing and wiping at Richard Nixon's desk when he was president. Instead of being prosecutor of Watergate, he's on this board with also businessman Alfred Bloomingdale and a retired aviation executive, Robert Six. And then the Intelligence Oversight Board, he has W. Glenn Campbell from Stanford University, Hoover Institute on War, Revolution, and Peace. This group of characters, it covers the whole era, particularly from the Kennedy assassination up to the present, even up to the shooting of Ronald Reagan, so that he has some beautiful plums that have been involved in the various conspiracies I've talked about. Now, they will review international domestic intelligence and report to him on the operations. Can you imagine what kind of conversations these people will carry? As far as the coup taking place, these are the people that were in the coup in Dallas. These are the people that still cover up the murders of a president, of civil rights leaders, of a senator who ran for president, and hundreds, literally hundreds of other murders also, with their role in the intelligence community. And to top that off, I received from the same party an article from, this is also from the Dallas Morning News, Texas on the Potomac, and the Texans have moved in. They even described George Bush as being one bullet away from being president, right in this article from the Dallas Morning News. News, Texas, on the Potomac. It talks about Representative Phil Graham, the conservative who worked with David Stockman to cut those budget cuts the way that Ronald Reagan wanted them. Vice President George Bush, the most powerful man in Washington under Reagan, who they describe, as I say, as one bullet away, a heartbeat away from the presidency, is how they describe George Bush. And James Baker, who used to be campaign manager for Bush, is now Reagan's chief of staff. So see how easily he would fit in if Reagan dies, or how much they control Reagan even at this point. And with Bush only a heartbeat away from the presidency, he has become exceptionally the most powerful White House chief of staff. This article goes on, and Senator John Tower, chairman of the Senate Armed Forces Committee, that's the brother-in-law of Samuel Cummings, the world's largest arms dealer, who I mentioned many times works with Wilson Turple Corcola and the highest echelon of the CIA. Samuel Cummings was in the CIA and is and lives in London, Monte Carlo, in Ireland, brother-in-law of John Tower. This is a who's who of Texans, including attorney Robert Strauss, being touted as the Democratic presidential candidate. He was under the pay of the Howard Hughes Organization at the time of Watergate, and the offices of Strauss and also John Connolly's law offices and Jaworski's, they've opened branches in Washington, D.C., as well as Houston. It describes Bell Helicopter with their important lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and the money that's being put into Washington for property from Clint Murchison and from Mel Crow and a very prominent Washington people. Texas, indeed, is on the Potomac. It is in California. It is everywhere. And, of course, the turning point, I believe, happened in Dallas, Texas, November 22, 1963. Another important article that came out to refute some of the outright lies that Alexander Haig has been pushing. And I always call him the Reichstag Haig, because he will build his career and whip up the lather of terrorism, communist Moscow to the hilt in order to increase the police force, the CIA, and our police department domestically, and get more arms and weapons to keep control of the native population here. When the food gets tight, when the unemployment comes, the excuse will be that there's terrorists. They will be simply hungry people rioting and burning down if they don't have money for food or heat or whatever. Haig and Reagan are experts at whipping up the international terrorist story, even though it doesn't hold water. And there was a long article in the New York Times this week on Alexander Haig. It was titled "Soviet Terror Ties Called Outdated." And it goes into the fact that the United States intelligence community has said that Alexander Haig's speeches from the time Ronald Reagan became president, starting with February 28, 1981, are 10 years old, that they're based on accusations that have no true information. And this came out of the New York Times. It said that the terror stories of Alexander Haig are outdated, that Ronald Reagan, early in his administration, charged that the Soviet Union was directly helping terrorists, that this was based on information 10 years ago by a Czech defector who is not reliable. What we're hearing, according to the New York Times, is 10-year-old testimony, and that's what I was saying on KLRB in January and February when they were spouting these outright lies. This study comes from the CIA. It says there's no substantial evidence or links of the USSR to terrorism, and it goes into the early stories of a Major General Sejna, S-E-J-N-A, who came to the United States in 1968 and told Western intelligence that groups like the Baader-Meinhof in Germany and the Red Brigades in Italy were trained by the Russians. And the evidence today says this isn't true, and they are calling Alexander Haig literally a liar. What they said was that in the early 60s, the Kremlin helped people like the Libyans, the Iraqis, the North Koreans, the Angolans for wars of national liberation. They did not set up terrorist organizations. And later, the centers that were set up to teach people about national liberation were infiltrated by people used by the Libyans, money pouring into these centers to train the PLO, the Biedermannhof, the Red Brigades, the Japanese Red Army, and Carlos the Jackal, that these people were trained specially that had nothing at all to do with the Soviet Union. There was no direct link, the CIA said, of these groups, terrorist groups, to the Soviet Union, no evidence to support it of any kind. And William Colby, the director of the CIA, was saying that the Soviet centers set in motion the activity for these terrorist groups. But that is not saying the Russians did it. In California, there was a Black Panther movement, there was the Indian movement, the United Prisoners movement, the United Farm Workers movement, and there were various social movements in the 60s, and then they became infiltrated with violent people. Even the rock concerts, the hippie movement, Woodstock was nothing like Altamont when the agents came in and began to make it violent. And the original intent at People's Park and elsewhere was to express natural feelings. And this article says that Haig has been not telling the truth, and that his speech, imagine the Secretary of the State using information that's 10 years old, that has no basis in fact, but if he says it loud enough and says it often enough, as Adolf Hitler taught, it becomes a fact. Jack Anderson had an article last week called Bombshell, and this wasn't last week, it was October 1980. I cut this out, and when he said the secret conclusion from the Justice Department files has said that, in fact, the United States is a worldwide supplier of hardware and technology to support military terrorism around the world, that CIA personnel and special forces are teaching terrorism, and that it's coming from the United States of America. Another article this last week from the Washington Post, terrorism is declining in the United States. It's declining when the government agents don't have provocateurs. When Reagan infiltrates with the new CIA escalating inside the United States, you will have the increase of terrorism, because it will be agents disguised as legitimate people with griefs. Just as you have the anti-nuclear protests, they're peaceful now. When he unleashes the CIA, the anti-nuclear people will be meeting with violent persons that will give the group a bad name. There was another article a while back, a UPI story, that Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson were training, and I've read this before, Italy's Red Army, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the Irish Republican Army. These men were arming terrorist groups as well as the CIA, and this is a point some people still don't understand. I get letters about the Central Intelligence Agency can send weapons to the Red Brigade in Italy, and they can send weapons to Licio Gelli, who's an outright fascist in Italy. They send weapons to Great Britain to fight the Irish, and they send the IRA weapons to fight the British. We send weapons to the PLO to fight the Israelis, and we send Israel weapons to bomb the PLO. The only place where you don't get the factions dividing, fighting each other is in the pure Nazi countries that control the government totally, such as Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay. These countries don't have opposing groups fighting each other because they have a fascist government in power already. The purpose of arming both sides is to destabilize those countries and keep them off their guard and create the excuse for the fascist police to come in. The speeches about terrorism that Haig continues to give, or Reagan wants to give, have no basis in fact, and certainly day after day there are articles coming out about our intelligence community sending pilots to bomb Chad. We send the weapons to Sudan to protect them against Chad. We send to Idi Amin have terrorism in Uganda, and now he's living in Saudi Arabia. But when he was in Uganda, and the CIA sent in weapons for him to torture, and then we send in money to stop him and get him out of power. The purpose, as I say, is to destabilize these people and keep them off their guards. And the truth is that there is no basis that the Soviet Union is doing this kind of terrorism at all. Now, last week, there was a bombing in Belgium, in Antwerp, an anti-Semitic group in the Jewish quarter. The bombs were blasted. A synagogue was burned, and one more attack. But this time, the people who did the attack called themselves the Direct Action Group, Section Belgium. They don't call themselves by the Red Brigades, the Bonner-Monhof, or whatever. They are Carlos's group, Carlos the Jackal, funded by a violently anti-Semitic CIA. That Jackal is down in South America or Tripoli, and he doesn't have to do these things anymore because he's too closely linked with the intelligence community that's being exposed recently, and they acknowledge they funded him. So now there's individual cells, Nazi cells like the Klan. They say, we are the Direct Action Group, Section Belgium. Now there's a Direct Action Group, Section in Austria. There's one in London. There's in the United States. They're all over the world. They're Nazi cells. And when they bombed this Jewish group in Antwerp, they took credit for it. And they said, we are the same people who were responsible for killing Jews at the Munich Olympic Games. And they listed other places that they had anti-Semitic bombings. They claimed that they were part of the Black September group that attacked the Israeli athletes at the Munich Games and so forth. Well, those same people that killed the 11 Jewish athletes and had the violences in Munich were the Edwin Wilson, Frank Turpel, Theodore Shackley CIA group. So if there's a Direct Action Group, Section Belgium, it is the CIA that is continuing their anti-Semitic bombings around the country. As soon as this same group that I mentioned put Allende into the grave and Pinochet into power in Chile, the swastikas and the armbands came out. And these type of things will take place until you get the full goose step in every country, and they claim we did the killings at Munich. Now, if they did the killings at Munich and the element that I've been talking about every week takes credit also for doing it, then what they're doing now is just using their specific cell name, and that's who they are. An article in the law in the New York Times, December 28, 1979, said that Mr. Frank Turpel said on tape recordings in New York City that he trained Carlos Ramirez, the Jackal, the Venezuela-born terrorist, that he planned and executed the killings of the Israeli athletes at the 1972 Olympic Games in Munich. Now, if Frank Turpel and these people are taking credit for all of that, and then the people who are bombing these anti-Semitic bombings are taking credit as being part of that group, then this is just a continuation of the same group, and these are not leftist terrorists. These are Nazis. These are funded by the CIA, and they have a lot of links, many, many countries throughout the world, and their formal organization is known as the ODESA. That's what the ODESA is. It was set up after World War II, and they're getting more flagrant and surfacing now. And what we're getting is our Secretary of Defense saying, if you oppose this kind of faction, you're an appeaser. You have to hate Russia and accept Nazism, because otherwise you're an appeaser. There's no logic in the State Department or anything they're saying. Now, getting back to Mr. Turpel and Wilson, two of my favorite subjects, and I think we'll be hearing about them for years to come. Stories broke out in the New York Times and in California the past week, headline stories about these characters. They read in this way. One was a San Jose Mercury, how the Soviet bloc tries to buy Silicon Valley secrets. That's a deceptive line. The New York Times had a story, indicted ex-agents are linked to area firms. This is out here in California. The New York Times had a larger story by Jeff Gerth and Philip Taubman. Ex-CIA men are linked to the overseas selling of sensitive systems and secret business ties with the ex-CIA agents. Now, I've talked about their offices in Washington, D.C. and in Switzerland and some of their shenanigans, but the real story gets deeper this last past week about these characters and who they are, because it takes them out to Sunnyvale, California, to a series of dummy front organizations that then set up their offices in Switzerland, London, and around the world. And these men, and I call them the killer team, this Edwin Turpel and Frank Turpel, and Edwin Wilson, Theodore Shackley, go back to the JM Wave connections, to the Kennedy assassination with the anti-Castro Cubans and the CIA, to the Phoenix program in Southeast Asia, and right up to the present day. But now these new articles place them in the laps of Stanford University, the CIA, David Packard was Assistant Secretary of Defense under Richard Nixon. And we find that Mr. Frank Turpel was the president of an organization in Sunnyvale, California, directly linked to Richard Helms of the CIA in Iran. And the tentacles of these men get more complicated but more easy to understand. And after this one-minute break, I'm going to try and go slowly to jump to these California connections so that in the weeks to come, you'll be able to get a better overview of who these characters are that I'm talking about.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.